Morning, everyone. Thanks for attending. I know right now everyone's a little frustrated with parking, but hopefully they'll get a little bit more organized and we'll get used to it as the weeks go along. One other housekeeping thing before, just remember the internal medicine update course, which is the last weekend of March at the Marriott at Boca Center, is open for registration. The registration is pretty heavy, so if you are going to register, please do so up front, because this year there's a chance we may actually sell out of space there. And it's Friday afternoon, starts at 11:30 in the morning, and goes till Friday evening, or early Friday evening, then Saturday morning and Sunday morning. And we've got speakers from all over, so I'd like everyone, if you're interested, to register. And also try to encourage especially the medical students and the residents, because there's a lot of good topics that will impact their practices, their careers, and all that. So I would encourage them to try to do this. This morning it's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Carrie McDonald, who is a breast surgeon. She joined the staff of the Christine Lynn Women's Health and Wellness Institute and Boca Care Physicians in September. She did her breast surgery fellowship up north. She did her medical degree from the University of Rochester School of Medicine and then did her general surgery at the University of Pittsburgh, followed by a breast surgical oncology fellowship at Roswell Park Cancer Institute in Buffalo. And this morning she's going to give us a talk on minimally invasive breast surgery.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for that introduction. I'm very happy to be here. So today I will be talking to you a little bit about minimally invasive breast surgery. I have no disclosures. So I will discuss a little bit about the history of mastectomy and how we kind of went from radical mastectomy to lumpectomy. I'll talk to you a little bit about the hidden scar technique for breast surgery. We'll delve into some of the percutaneous techniques for treating smaller breast cancers, such as cryoablation. Some people have even started using robotic surgery in breast. And I'll try to give you, at the end, just a holistic picture of how the field of breast surgery is becoming more minimally invasive. So, significant progress has really been made in the treatment of breast cancer. And historically, women who had breast cancer were treated with a Halsted radical mastectomy. And this was a very morbid procedure based on the idea that breast cancer really spread locally at first and then traveled into the lymphatic system where it was trapped. And so breast surgeons at this time thought that they were being presented with bigger cancers, and they thought that it needed bigger surgery to remove a lot of these trapped lymphatics. And so the radical mastectomy really involved removing the skin, because a lot of times the breast cancers ulcerated through the skin. They removed the pectoralis muscle because they wanted to remove kind of those transpectoral lymph nodes. And they also thought you had to remove the muscle to do an axillary dissection. So you can imagine that these were procedures that left women with big gaping holes in their chest, significant lymphedema, decreased range of motion in terms of their upper extremity. And not, surgeons at this time were not really thinking about the quality of life for their patients. So then came an American surgeon, Bernie Fisher, who is really a pioneer in kind of the biology and treatment of breast cancer. He's a Pittsburgh native, came from where I trained. He's the former chairman of the NSABP. And really, throughout the 1960s and 1970s, he studied cancer biology. And so he really started to question some of the theories upon which Halsted's approach was based. So he said, before 1971, if you had breast cancer, chances are you'd have to get your breast cut off. Surgeons had been taught one thing: radical surgery saves lives. And so, he started to wonder, while these women were dying, despite having such radical surgery, because tumor cells were being dislodged during the operation. And so he was wondering whether or not we really needed to perform such big surgery to treat these women. And so he began to do a bunch of research investigations into tumor biology and kind of the pathways of tumor metastasis. And so he hypothesized that breast cancer was really more of a systemic disease in which the tumor cells were disseminated throughout the body, you know, by the time of diagnosis, and that more expansive local regional therapy was unlikely to improve survival. And so instead, people started really thinking about smaller surgery to treat breast cancer. So this led to investigations done by the NSABP, and this is one of the first trials, NSABP-4, that really started to look at kind of the safety and the switch from radical mastectomy to what's modified radical mastectomy. And so this trial involved two arms, patients who had node negative breast cancer and were treated with radical mastectomy, modified radical mastectomy or total mastectomy with radiation, and total mastectomy alone without any axillary dissection. And then node positive breast cancers were randomized to the first two arms, radical mastectomy and total mastectomy with radiation. And so the goal was really to determine whether patients who received local regional treatment other than radical mastectomy had similar outcomes. And so what they found was at 3 years, at 5 years, and at 10 years, there was really no significant difference in survival, disease-free survival or overall survival among patients in those groups, node positive or node negative. In 2002, they published an update to this looking at the 25-year outcomes, and still they were able to find that there were no differences in survival. They also looked at local regional recurrence and found that patients who had total mastectomy alone had higher recurrence of 13%, but when you added radiation, you were able to drop that down to 5%, and radical mastectomy had a local regional recurrence of about 9%. So similar trends were seen in node-positive patients. So there are lots of trials that look at breast conservation and mastectomy, and it is well known that there's no difference in survival amongst the two procedures. And this is one, the NSABP-6 trial is one of those trials that also helped to show that. So in this trial, patients had breast cancer less than 4 centimeters, didn't matter what their nodal status was, and they were looking at comparing patients who had modified radical mastectomy now to even smaller surgery, so lumpectomy. So even in this trial, they still did axillary dissections, but the lumpectomy, you know, you had one arm with radiation and one arm without radiation. And so again, at 5 years, at 8 years, and at 12 years follow-up, there was no difference in disease-free survival or an overall survival among these patients. And when they looked at the 20-year follow-up data that was published in 2002, there was also no significant differences in survival. They didn't really see big differences in recurrence rates between breast conservation and mastectomy. I mean, overall, in general, mastectomy will have a slightly lower recurrence rate than a lumpectomy. But, you know, when you looked at the patients who received lumpectomy and radiation, their recurrence rate was 14% compared to 39% in patients who had lumpectomy alone. So there is a trend where radiation does help to improve local regional recurrence. So, you know, since the time that these trials were conducted, the rates of in-breast tumor recurrence have significantly decreased because we have a lot more sophisticated systemic therapies. We have a lot more sophisticated imaging. And this is looking back into the 1990s where breast conservation was a more chosen, I guess, way you can say, compared to mastectomy. Probably around 2013 when Angelina Jolie came out with, her BRCA positivity and mastectomies, there we saw a rise in mastectomies. But I would say overall, breast conservation is very feasible for a majority of patients, and there are a lot of individual factors that you have to take into account. So just to give you an update, so in patients that are receiving modern era therapy, so the most modern systemic therapies and radiation, Dr. Newman, she actually did a 2018 meta-analysis that looked at local regional recurrence in a cohort of patients that were receiving breast conservation and other systemic therapies. And what she found was that the overall rate of local recurrence after lumpectomy at 5 years was 4.2%. And when you stratify this based on the type of breast cancer that you have, triple negative breast cancer is going to have a higher local regional recurrence, and they found that to be 6.9%, because the only options that they really have for treatment are surgery and chemotherapy, so they don't have the options of getting endocrine therapy. Patients who are triple positive have a local regional recurrence of 3%, and even if you're ER negative but HER2 positive, local regional recurrence is still fairly low at 4.7%, because we have so much more better therapies to offer these patients. So really quickly, so patients are with breast cancer that are node negative. I mean, the run-of-the-mill breast cancer is ER positive. And these patients, have the ability to have endocrine therapy as part of their treatment. And one of the popular medicines that we use is tamoxifen, but we also use aromatase inhibitors. And tamoxifen has been shown to decrease in breast tumor recurrence from about 4% to 14% to 4%. Even in women who are ER negative, so that means they either have triple negative breast cancer or HER2 positive breast cancer. These are patients who are getting chemotherapy, and chemotherapy has significantly helped to decrease local regional recurrence from 13% to about 2%. And so really, as survival has increased as a result of just improvement in our therapies. I'll skip that trial because it's just the same. So while breast conservation kind of, has represented, a great step in minimally invasive techniques, if you really want to call it that, it really does have the potential for further refinement. And so there is something called the hidden scar technique. There's like a hidden scar program. Patients can go on Google and look up a hidden scar surgeon. And what that really means is how can we perform lumpectomies in such a way that the scars are less visible? Because sometimes these are scars that can be painful reminders for patients of what they've been through. And so the three best places to place these scars are in the inframammary fold, because you're not going to see that, around the areola, and in the axilla, because your arm's down and you really won't see that as well. So typically, when we think about breast conservation, you're doing surgery on the breast, but breast cancer, if it goes anywhere, it goes to the axillary lymph nodes. And so there's another incision in the axilla. And so you have kind of two scars sometimes, which can be close together, because, oftentimes majority of breast cancers happen in the upper outer quadrant, and so those two scars can be close together, and then you worry about compromising the skin in between. And so this was a study done, a pilot study done at Emory in 2018 that looked at single incision surgery for breast conservation, where you're taking both the tumor in the breast and the lymph node in the axilla all through one incision. And this might be hard to read, but what they found was they had, when they compared patients who had the single incision technique to standard breast conservation, 85% of the tumors were in the upper outer quadrant in the single incision group. They didn't find any difference in complication rates between the two procedures. There were no episodes of major lymphedema or decreased range of motion. They showed that the single incision technique was associated with a shorter operative time, 56 minutes compared to 64 minutes, and there was no statistically significant difference in re-excision rates. This study was kind of, had breast surgeons thinking that if you can use a single incision technique, which is a little bit more minimally invasive for the patient, then it's best to do that. So just like breast conservation, mastectomy has really come a long way. We have a lot of reconstruction techniques. We have skin-sparing mastectomy. But I think one of the biggest trends now is nipple-sparing mastectomy. So women are not only able to preserve the skin flaps to the breast, but also preserve the nipple areolar complex. And these are just some pictures demonstrating it, where we usually make an incision in the inframammary fold. So, I mean, once it's actually done, I mean, it almost looks like the original. And so the breast tissue, there's a fatty plane between the breast tissue and the skin. So under the nipple areolar complex, you don't have that same fatty tissue. So there was a lot of concern about leaving breast tissue behind because you have to preserve the blood supply to the nipple in recurrence. But there have been retrospective studies looking at nipple-sparing mastectomy that have showed that the local regional recurrence is very low. It's probably on the order of less than 2%. And having a recurrence of the nipple, of cancer in the nipple, is very infrequent and doesn't really happen. So it's a very good technique if a woman is amenable to having that. It is also a technique that really does, we don't think about it a lot, but it improves like a woman's psychosocial well-being, their sexual health, and these are all things that, you know, affect women as they go through their breast cancer treatment. So, you know, the trend in breast cancer and the whole field is looking towards kind of becoming smaller and smaller surgery. You know, we're finding smaller and smaller cancers because we have a lot more sophisticated imaging techniques, and so we're finding things very early. But we're treating them the same way that we did in the 60s or the 70s. And so people have started to look at cryoablation to treat small breast cancers. And cryoablation, you know, is a very well-established technique for the treatment of fibroadenomas, which are benign growths in the breast. And so building on that experience, people are now looking at using this to treat very early small breast cancers. And so what this involves is it's an office procedure. It's done under ultrasound where, you know, you make pea-sized incisions in the breast and a cryo probe is placed towards the tumor, and liquid nitrogen is used through the probes to really kind of turn that tumor into an ice ball. So it's a freezing of the tumor. So there are two freezing cycles of 5 to 8 minutes each with a thawing cycle in between, and that is thought to produce a higher rate of cell death. There are preliminary studies in mice that have shown that this freezing causes cell destruction that activates the immune response to essentially attack the cancer, and it also creates memory. So if there is microscopic disease that is trying to eventually one day turn into a recurrence, you have some memory there in terms of the immune system. So the ideal lesion for cryoablation, this is an ultrasound, is one that is small. So studies have looked at tumors that are ideally less than a centimeter, but people have gone up to 1.5 centimeters. Tumors that are unifocal, central in the breast. This is an MRI, that's an ultrasound. And you want a tumor that has a very favorable biomarker status, so ER positive, HER2 negative breast cancers. Ideally, you want it to be a good distance from the skin, at least a centimeter from the skin, and 3 millimeters from the chest wall, because you can burn the skin or even the muscle with this technique. So in the fibroadenoma data, it's been shown that cryoablation causes less pain. I mean, it's done under local anesthetic, so it doesn't require the removal of normal surrounding breast tissue like a lumpectomy. So you're just targeting the tumor itself. In the fibroadenoma data, when you look at pre- and post-mammographies, there's normal breast architecture that is maintained. A lot of times when after lumpectomy, we image our patients with mammography, and you'll see changes of distortion or post-surgical changes or fat necrosis that happens. This is an outpatient procedure. It's less expensive than using OR time. It's more minimally invasive, and there's really no recovery. You put a Band-Aid on those incisions, and patients go home. But the concern is that you could be missing microscopic disease. Maybe surgery offers more control. And there's really not a lot of long-term data in cryoablation right now for the treatment of early breast cancer, and the studies that are done don't have a lot of patients. And so this was kind of the first big trial looking at cryoablation for the treatment of early stage breast cancer. This is the Z1072 trial, and these are unifocal ductal carcinomas. So lobular carcinomas tend to be more multicentric and bilateral, so they're not included. These were less than 2 centimeters, less than 25% DCIS, and they, you obviously have to see it on imaging. And so they were looking at things like the rate of complete tumor ablation, and after cryoablation, these patients got MRI and then went on to have surgery 28 days after the cryoablation. They also did get all of the same systemic therapies that they would normally receive. So this is a tumor pre-cryoablation. This one's fairly close to the muscle. And this is post-cryoablation, showing kind of what that ice ball looks like on MRI. And this is on ultrasound. And so you can see there's a lot of, there's some hyperemia to the ice ball. And it takes, it's shown to take about 1 year for that ice ball to kind of really resolve. And so this trial showed that, so they were looking at tumor ablation, and they defined that in two ways. No remaining invasive cancer present on the pathologic specimen after surgery, and the success rate of that was about 80.5%, and no residual invasive ductal breast cancer or DCIS present in the specimen as well. And you can see the success rate goes down to 69% once you start mixing DCIS in the picture. They also looked at the negative predictive value of MRI and found that that was 81.2%, so about 20% of the time MRI is not picking up residual disease in the breast. So one of the big things that they showed was that size does matter, and so the smaller the tumor is, the greater the success rate. And so for tumors that were less than a centimeter, there was 100% ablation in terms of there was no residual enhancement seen on MRI. But still, they had tumor evident on final path approximately 24% of the time. So it's not 100% effective. But, you know, we do lumpectomies. We don't know if we get, we hope that we get the majority of the disease, and we treat those patients with radiation. And so, you know, the same kind of argument could be used that these patients, they go on to get radiation, which could destroy some of the microscopic disease that may have been outside of the ablative pathway. So two big trials that are underway right now, I'll just mention them briefly. This one is the FROST trial. So this is freezing instead of resection of small breast tumors. So and so they hypothesize that cryoablation will, you know, result in complete tumor ablation, and these patients don't need to even go on to have surgery. And these, this was a trial that was started in 2016. It's a multi-center trial that is going to accrue patient over, it's accruing patient over 3 years, and will follow them for 5 years. And it's looking at very favorable cancers, so women over 50, less than 1.5 centimeters, unifocal. Followed by cryoablation, and they get imaged every 6 months. So 6 months after cryoablation, they're going to get a biopsy of that cryoablated lesion to determine if there's residual disease left. And if there is residual disease, they will move on to having surgery. So they're really looking at, they want to look at, in, you know, tumor recurrence and kind of the rate of tumor ablation. Another big trial is called the ICE-3 trial, and this is also doing the same thing kind of as the FROST trial. These women are a little bit older, over 60, and their tumors are less than 1.5. This trial does have some preliminary data, again, a small number of patients. So out of 104 patients that were followed for almost 2 years, 103 have not been shown to have a recurrence in that time. So they're saying that there's a 99% success rate with cryo in this study. And they didn't really have many adverse events reported, you know, some edema, some bruising, but not too bad. So the researchers in this study, you know, think that cryoablation is almost just as successful as lumpectomy, which has about a 90 to 95% rate at removing all of the tumor. And so they're looking at 99% so far. So I'm not very familiar with robotics in breast surgery, but it has been done, and it has mostly been used in nipple-sparing mastectomy. So when you create that incision in the inframammary fold, it can be hard to kind of see to dissect all the way up to the superior pole. It's really like working in a hole, so you have to have really good instruments. So robotics for nipple-sparing mastectomy started in Europe. This is an Italian experience that was done in 2017. They had 29 patients, and they go through a an incision in the mid-axillary line. Takes about 3 hours. Conversion rate to open was 7%. They didn't report any major complications. Two patients had a small degree of blistering. So the first plastic surgeon to ever do robotic breast surgery is this guy by the name of Dr. Neil Tanna. He's at Long Island Jewish Medical Center. So in March of last year, he did a robotic nipple-sparing mastectomy on a patient who had BRCA. So she did not have breast cancer. And that was a success. And so, you know, if you go to his website, he says, bringing breast surgery into the 21st century with innovation, with innovative robotic mastectomy and robotic breast reconstruction. So people are really starting to think about how to make breast surgery more aesthetically appealing for patients. So again, robotic surgery, minimally invasive, improved aesthetics. They think there's better preservation of the vascularity to the nipple areolar complex and to the skin envelope. And then you also get all the benefits of using the robot. So there's magnification. There's a lot more in terms of degrees of motion that you can use. But it is more costly. It does add time to the case, and there is a learning curve. And then in February of this year, there was an article put out by NBC, and the title was "The FDA Warns Against Using Surgical Robots for Breast Cancer Surgery." And that's mostly because it's not technically approved in terms of, you know, it's not approved for breast cancer surgery. And so they say that they can't determine the survival between patients who have it done robotically versus the traditional way. So I don't know where robotics will go in terms of breast cancer surgery, but I think it's probably a bit far off. So just lastly, briefly, the whole field of breast cancer surgery is really changing, and just the field of breast cancer itself, there's like lots of research that's being done. And I'll just show you three ways in which we're doing less for patients now in terms of the treatment of breast cancer. So there are patients who have HER2-negative and triple-negative breast cancer who require neoadjuvant chemotherapy, so chemotherapy before surgery. A lot of those patients will go on to have a complete pathological response. And they will often ask, well, now the tumor is gone. There's no evidence on imaging that I have any cancer. They can't feel anything in terms of their breast. The lump is gone. So why do I need surgery? Do I really have to have surgery? And so there's a guy by the name of Henry Kruger who's at MD Anderson, and he's actually looking at this right now. And he's looking at the selective elimination of breast surgery after neoadjuvant chemotherapy. And so in 2018, he conducted a feasibility study, which was a single center kind of prospective study of 40 patients with HER2 positive and triple negative breast cancer. They were T1 to T3, N0 to N1. And so they had a biopsy to prove that they had cancer. But after chemotherapy, they got a needle biopsy. And they compared the results of the needle biopsy to the actual pathology after surgery. And the question that they were asking was, does a needle biopsy predict residual disease? And so they found that the accuracy of the needle biopsy was 98% with a negative predictive value of 95%. And so now they're actually conducting a multi-center trial in which patients are getting needle biopsies after chemotherapy and not going on to surgery, and they're going to be looking at recurrence rates. But they're still getting all the other standard treatments like radiation. So that is still not standard of care, but it's something that, you know, if randomized trials prove to show benefit, that could be the new wave of the future. Something that we've started to do now is omit sentinel lymph node biopsies in elderly patients with hormone-positive breast cancer. So this was a study looking at women who were over the age of 70, small breast cancers, favorable, ER-positive, HER2-negative, and they were followed for 4 years. And they had a 4% breast cancer-related event, so they had like one axillary recurrence in 4 patients that died from breast cancer. The overall survival is low, which is 70%, but the breast cancer-specific survival rate was 96%. So these women are really dying of something else, and they found that that was heart disease. And tumor size is the only factor that really correlated with survival. So when we have patients now who are elderly, like we have a lot of patients in Boca who are elderly, who are diagnosed with these very small 5-millimeter, 6-millimeter breast cancers, ER-positive, HER2-negative, depending on the situation, we will selectively omit sentinel lymph node biopsy and just treat them with lumpectomy, as it has not been shown to affect their survival in the studies. So it's exactly these types of patients that can possibly have cryoablation instead of lumpectomy to treat their breast cancer. And then lastly, DCIS is is a hot topic too. There is something called the COMET trial, which is looking at comparing operative to monitoring with endocrine therapy. So DCIS, you know, that's early stage breast cancer that is confined to the ducts. And so it is estimated that about 20 to 30% of DCIS will become invasive. The current standard right now is to treat DCIS with surgery, radiation, and endocrine therapy. But that's the exact same way that we treat people who have invasive breast cancer. And so Shelley Wang, who's at Duke University, started this multi-center clinical trial to stratify patients with low-risk DCIS into kind of standard treatment, which is kind of goal-directed treatment where they get everything, versus what they call active surveillance, where they don't get surgery, but they have the option of getting endocrine therapy, and they follow them with serial imaging. So the results of this are not out, but they're, you know, one day we could come to a point where we're not even doing surgery on DCIS. So, you know, it's a very exciting field. There's a lot of research being done. People are always thinking of a way to really minimize our treatments for breast cancer, and these are some of the examples currently. Thank you for your time. So not as general standard of care, no, but there have been some retrospective studies looking at treating small breast cancers with radiation alone, but there's no long-term follow-up data on that. I did have a patient who is 97 years old with a small breast cancer and multiple comorbidities, and we are going to ablate her tumor with radiation. So it's not out of the realm, but it's not common that we do that. Okay, thank you.